Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Monday, October 14th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so, to go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me as we kick off a new week here on Bang the Book Radio. We joined by one guest, that is professional handicapper Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com for our Week 8 college football first look. Before we get into that, though, we'll take a look at the Monday night football game between the Lions and the Packers, and also recap Week 6 in the NFL. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. A 3-1 tennis preview from Big Ten Watto posted over there for today's action. Also, we got a lot of matinee NHL, which, of course, will already be over by the time you hear this show. But you got Parker Michaels every day with his NHL picks and analysis over at the website. My college football power ratings for Week 8 have been posted, as well as my college football opening line report for Week 8. Lots of interesting games, some overreactions out there in the marketplace as well. Good stuff in those two write-ups for me, although I am a little bit biased. Also on the NBA side, championship odds and MVP odds from Admir Aljic. The NBA starts next week. I believe it's next Tuesday. So we add yet another sport to the mix here for all of us to handicap. We'll have good coverage of that throughout the season over at the website. As you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook, BTB, and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. One guest joins me here on the program today. That is professional handicapper Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com. Kyle, how's it going today, man?
Going all right, man. Monday morning. A lot going on with prepping for NBA season now. And as you mentioned, that's just right around the corner. And, you know, still busy time here with college football and the NFL. I have to say, had kind of a weird weekend where college football, I made just a little bit of money on Saturday and then lost just a little bit with a 2-2 day there yesterday in the NFL. So finished almost exactly where I started, which is not exactly, you know, how I wanted the weekend to go, but it could have been worse.
Yeah, it could have been. I had 3 half-point losses on the college football side, so that was all sorts of fun. You know, it's about a break-even college football Saturday for me. 3-2 in both contests in the NFL. I'll be able to talk about that on Friday's Super Contest segment for Week 7. One other thing before we get too far into today's show. I want to thank everybody for the birthday wishes that they sent out on social media. Thank you so much for acknowledging that. And really appreciate the kind words here about the work that we do, both at bangthebook.com and also here on Bang the Book Radio. So with that, obviously coming out of a birthday weekend, a little bit slow going for me here on a Monday, but we've got a pretty interesting and pretty decent Monday night football game here once again, Lions and Packers. And I got to say, man, this has been just one-sided line movement. We saw some places open as high as 6 early in the week. We're down to 3.5, pretty much market-wide, a 4 at Bovada, which, of course, as we know, suggests the public side very much Green Bay here. A 3 with minus 125 on Green Bay at Bookmakers. So very steady Lions movement here throughout the week.
Yeah, 66% of the bets on Green Bay, and yet the Lions, the movement has gone toward the Lions pretty heavily, which tells you quite a bit. You know, this is a game where I don't have any strong opinions. You know, I think that Green Bay is a quality team, but you know, I have to question how good is their win over Dallas at this point. You know, Dallas with a really poor performance yesterday. And the teams that Dallas beat earlier this year, I mean, you know, they didn't really beat anybody good. So let's see about Green Bay. I know that they've had some quick starts and then haven't finished very well. You know, they've done well so far this year, ATS. So have the Lions. So we've got two teams who have been good to betters, ATS, so far this year. Green Bay, a team that, you know, to me, their offense really hasn't been very good for most of the game. They're 23rd in the NFL in yards per play at 5.49, yards per rush, 26th. They've done very well in the red zone. They've maximized their red zone trips. I don't know. Maybe you could say that, you know, with a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, you'd probably do pretty well in the red zone. I know they had some issues in the red zone against the Eagles. So in all the rest of the games, they've done really well. But Detroit, a team to me that is a little bit hard to rate right now. You know, the Lions, I think they're better than most people thought they were. But I don't want to get too high on the Lions. So both of these teams I have some question marks about.
Yeah, I think so too. And I will say this here. You've got Detroit coming in off of extra prep. They did have the bye week last week. And then, of course, the extra day here playing on Monday Night Football. Something you and I were talking about and something I saw on social media that kind of led me in this direction. The Packers here on the season so far have been very, very good in the first quarter. That Matt LaFleur scripted drive has gone over very, very well. In the first quarter this year on offense, Green Bay averaging 9.98 yards per play. Almost 10 yards per play. Almost a first down per play for Green Bay here in the first quarter. Second quarter, 6.2. Third quarter, 6.2. Fourth quarter, 5.11. So this is a Green Bay team that does have a good script coming into the game, but as the game goes along, you kind of worry a little bit about Matt LaFleur, his ability to make adjustments. Obviously, this defense has played very well. You give Mike Pettine a lot of credit for that. But that leads me to a couple of different ways to possibly play this game. The first would be Green Bay first quarter, obviously, which is counterintuitive to the fact that Detroit's coming off of a bye with extra prep time. But Green Bay has been very, very efficient on offense in the first quarter. 72 plays, 10 yards per play. So they've been very, very good there. Now, the thing is, if they don't have a good first quarter, because Detroit had the extra prep time, time to look at, you know, the plays that Matt LaFleur is probably going to roll out in the first quarter, then you're looking at Detroit from a live betting standpoint, because Green Bay, as the game goes along, has gotten progressively worse on offense. So that's how I'd be looking at this game here. Green Bay first quarter, and if they struggle in the first quarter, Detroit in some sort of live betting sense.
Yeah, the other thing you wonder about is if you maybe could take a team total in the first half or even first quarter. Not something I do too often, but you know, Green Bay first half team total 13.5, Green Bay first quarter team total 6.5. That makes some sense to me, you know, based on the stats that you gave there. I don't have a lot of confidence that Green Bay's offense is going to be really good throughout this game, but you know, they have shown to be very good, like you said, in those scripted plays. So maybe you want to take a team total over early in the game. You know, I think that this is a game where I would have, you know, like you and I said beforehand, we would have liked to have the Lions plus 6, plus 5.5, something like that. At this point, I can't take anything on the spread. But, you know, actually, I might put a little bit on the team total first half over just to have a little bit of fun here.
Yeah, and you look at Green Bay here, 4.9 yards per play allowed in the first quarter, 6 in the second quarter, 8.88 in the third quarter, 6.09 in the fourth quarter. So again, look for some in-game running opportunities where the Packers, not a great second half team here so far this year, either on offense or on defense, which is a sign that, you know, maybe Matt LaFleur not making the adjustments that are required. So maybe that's the way that you look at this game here tonight. But Kyle, as we take a look at week 6 from an overview standpoint here, what kind of stood out to you in yesterday's action?
You know, I think the Saints impressed me quite a bit. You know, Bridgewater, not great. The Saints defense is better than I expected them to be. Also, the Texans win at KC, I thought was a really impressive win. You know, the Texans are a team that has a really high upside. You know, it's hard for me to back the Texans too often because I've seen Bill O'Brien's, you know, mishaps and things like that. But the Texans certainly are a quality team. You know, those were a couple of the games that really stood out to me. You know, Miami, with their tanking, that was pretty interesting. And obviously, like I mentioned already, Dallas with a really poor performance there yesterday. And, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention one that I got wrong this past weekend. I picked the Rams. I thought it was a good spot for them with San Francisco on a short week. The Rams with extra time. San Francisco was really, really impressive. So, you know, maybe the 49ers are just actually that good.
Yeah, the 49ers are extremely impressive for a variety of different reasons because they were also missing both tackles in that game and their fullback going out, you know, Juszczyk, yeah, or whatever his name is. You know, they had to really adjust their offense a little bit too. And Kyle Shanahan's doing a fabulous job there. Also, Robert Saleh is doing a really good job as the defensive coordinator. He may find himself in a head coaching role here sooner rather than later. And, you know, they've done a great job. Look, This league is about getting after the quarterback. If you don't get to a quarterback, he's going to move the football. And the 49ers are doing a very good job of that. They're disrupting a lot of plays. you've got to give them a lot of credit because they went all in drafting defensive linemen. You know, they've gotten guys like Buckner and Armstead and, of course, Nick Bosa. You know, they did the right things with building up that defense. It took some time, but you know, obviously the 49ers here in great shape. A couple of games you didn't mention that I'll touch on here. You know, the Browns, obviously, I mean, that's a game you have to have. That's a very disappointing loss for them. I know Russ made some plays. Russ is your runaway MVP here at this point in time, as far as I'm concerned. But red zone turnovers, questionable play calling, a lot of things going wrong for the Browns here. A lot of detail-oriented things. I think they may have too many cooks in the kitchen on offense. I think, no pun intended, but you know, Freddie Kitchens trying to do his thing with the offense. I don't think he jives with Todd Monken. I don't think they're a great fit. And they're trying to keep guys like Jarvis Landry happy, trying to keep Odell Beckham happy. They've got to simplify things a little bit here. I know nobody wants to run the football in the NFL anymore, but Nick Chubb is a great running back, a good receiver. You know, they're trying to get Beckham too involved in the offense. It's too telegraphed when Beckham's going to be involved in the offense. And the interception thing for Baker, I get it. A lot of these picks are going off of receivers' hands and whatnot, but ball placement is a skill that a quarterback absolutely must have. It's not a wide receiver's fault if it's thrown behind him and hits him in the hands and gets picked. It's still the quarterback's fault. Baker's had way too many of those here. The play calling in the red zone's been bad. The execution in the red zone's been bad. The Browns are a tough team to back, and I did like them. It was one of my two losses in the Circa and the Super Contest. I thought it was a good spot for them, and this is just a team with a lot of talent that just can't put it together. And I think that we could draw a parallel, you know, as we start to look at the college side here, of some of these college teams, like a UCLA or like a USC, that just had all kinds of talent and couldn't put it together. The Browns are basically like that type of team here, and in the NFL, you can't get away with that. Teams are going to make you pay for that, and teams have made the Browns pay for that so far.
Yeah, first of all, I have to say, too many cooks in the kitchen. I think I might have to use that one for the all Browns right. At some point. That was solid. Even if you didn't try to do that, that was pretty nice. Yards per rush, though, the Browns are 5.3 yards per carry so far this year. I agree with you that, you know, Chubb has been very good for them. I think that he's probably a little bit underutilized both in the running and passing game at this point. And we know that they haven't been very efficient at all in the passing game. So you wonder if they should try to get Chubb more involved when it comes to the running game and the passing game with some screens and things like that. It's certainly something that he is talented and able to do. So, you know, I think Cleveland's a tough team because it's not going to surprise me if they pull some upsets and beat some good teams. But I wouldn't want to rely on them to, you know, be consistently good either.
All right, so let's transition over to the college football side of things here because we got a lot of stuff to get to here on today's show. Quick hitters, some injury notes, some regression stats. Then we're going to mention all 7 weeknight games here, some of them with a lot more detail and a lot stronger of opinions than others. And, of course, UCLA-Stanford, we currently don't have a line for, but we'll still talk about all the weeknight games that are coming up here. But we start with the quick hitters and some big-name teams, some under-the-radar types of teams, some really good notes and nuggets here coming your way on today's show.
Yeah, the first one I wanted to mention is Louisville. 13th in the nation in yards per play this year. What a job that Scott Satterfield is doing. This is a guy that, you know, everybody thought that this was a good hire, but it would take some time. He's done way better than anybody could have imagined. Louisville is a team that I moved up 3.5 points in my PRs for this week. I don't want to be too low on them. A really well-coached team. And you also have to remember that Louisville is 13th in the nation in yards per play so far this year, and they also have had significant injuries at the quarterback position. So just a very, very good scheme there for Louisville.
And I know Louisville quit on last season. We all know that. We all saw that play out. But they were 98th in the country last year in yards per play, tied with teams like Oregon State and Ball State, below a team like UConn. So amazing job here by Scott Satterfield, to say the least. And I also moved Louisville up 3 points in my power ratings.
Yeah, I think you don't want to be too low on Louisville at this point. They've proven that they're just a lot better than we thought they were. I thought it was interesting when you look at Oklahoma's first in the nation in 20-plus yard gainers at 60 plays so far this year. Who's second? Western Michigan with 47. The Broncos, a very explosive offense, not very good on defense. Even though they don't play very fast as far as the tempo, Western Michigan games could be pretty high scoring here throughout this season because they give up a lot of big plays and they get a lot of big plays.
Yeah, and as you look here, Northwestern has 9 plays of 20 or more yards. Nice. They're getting a huge number against Ohio State here in a game we'll talk about coming up on Friday. But Western Michigan, I still don't know what to do with this team. And my power rating line here for this week is 5.5 against Eastern Michigan. The market's at 9.5 on that game. And I just don't know what to do with this Western Michigan team because they move the football and they do a very good job of it. But man, there may not be a more inconsistent team in the country than the Broncos this year.
Yeah, and without Dwayne Eskridge, you know, one of their best players there for the season. So with the collarbone injury, that hurts them quite a bit. I think I have 7.5 in that game. Eastern Michigan's a team that I had to downgrade a decent amount in my PRs. I believe it was 4 or 4.5. I thought Eastern Michigan was going to be better than what they were. I downgraded Eastern Michigan 4.5 points. But
I moved Eastern Michigan 5 points, and wow. I still have value on that. So okay. I don't know. Again, I mean, maybe I just wasn't low enough on Eastern Michigan to begin with. But you know, and I will say this, not to hijack the segment here, but I know we're going to talk about another MAC team here in a couple of minutes in Buffalo. I feel like I've just been, you know, playing musical chairs with that conference all year long. I just don't know how to rate any of those teams. Ohio took a big tumble for me this week because they're obviously not very good, even with Nathan Rourke doing everything that he can. You know, Ball State all of a sudden looks pretty good. Toledo losing outright to Bowling Green is a 26-point favorite. I don't know what to do with that conference in general this year.
No, I totally agree with you. My first instinct was to think that I might want to fade Bowling Green coming off that game last weekend, but I don't see much line value in that game that they play this week. So I think that the MAC is a very, very hard conference to rate this year. You got some teams that are clearly bad, and then you got some teams that you thought were good, and maybe they're not very good. So Ohio's defense has just been really bad. You know, 116th in the nation yards per play allowed. Nathan Rourke's very good, but the rest of the team isn't very good, which is pretty surprising that Ohio is that bad. But I'll go ahead and mention Buffalo since we were on the MAC. Buffalo averaging 34.08 yards per punt. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe their punter might be their backup quarterback. Yes.
How the hell do you not recruit a punter?
I was going to say this is a Division I team and they don't have a punter. I mean, it seems to me that that's a pretty strange occurrence.
Here you go. Who has the second lowest punting average in college football?
I think it's Bama, right?
It is. It's Alabama because I mean, they never have to kick the ball deep. They're running from midfield when it's, you know, 4th and 18 or something. So that's kind of a fun little stat. You know, best team in the country, bar none. And they're 129th in punting average. Of course, they've only had 13 punts on the year. So that's part of it.
And Buffalo doesn't have the same problem of punting from the 40 every time. So, it's just pretty strange. And it would point out that, you know, Buffalo special teams, I think they're rated second worst in the country by S&P and not surprising. So that's something to keep in mind as you handicap them. I wanted to say that UMass is 9th in the nation in tempo. It seems really strange to me when you have a defense like UMass does to want to play this fast. I mean, you just want to be really, really terrible as fast as you can. I don't know. It just doesn't make much sense to me, and it clearly isn't working.
No, it really isn't. And, I mean, Walt Bell wasn't really – Florida State didn't play all that fast last year, right? Obviously, they're playing faster with Kendall Briles this year, but, you know, Walt Bell was the OC there last year. Florida State didn't play all that fast last season, to my recollection, did they?
I think they played faster than the average team, but not this fast.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess if you're going to lose spectacularly, right? Maybe they're tanking for Tua. I don't know.
Yeah, right. Right. I mean, maybe I assume that he's just trying to put in a system that this is what he wants to do in the future. But, you know, for this year, it's not working. And UMass is unbettable team for me. You know, I can't lay the points against them either, but you know, it's just a team that I would look past as far as an ATS standpoint. You know, I consider some overs with them if the number's low enough, but it's probably not going to be low enough too often. I think it's interesting to see Kansas is over 7 on fourth down conversion attempts this year. You could probably say that this is a regression stat as well. You know, just that they can't keep going 0-for-7 all the time. Kansas is an interesting team to me in that, you know, they've been a little bit better than I thought they would be, but I still don't know exactly what they are.
BYU 2-for-11 and Bowling Green 3-for-15. Imagine turning the ball over 12 times on downs through 6 games. I mean, I get it. You're getting blown out every game, so you might as well, except for when you play Toledo. But, you know, you might as well go for every fourth down, you know. So it is interesting to look at those things, too, because not only are those just, you know, signs of some possible regression. You know, for example, nobody's converted a fourth down against Maryland in 9 tries. And Maryland already has enough problems of its own. But it's also it speaks to play design and play selection also to see some of these teams that can have success on fourth down and some that don't. And again, these are small sample sizes, and some of these may be, you know, 4th and 15, but a lot of these are probably 4th and 3 or less. So got to keep that in mind too.
Yeah. I think those teams that have gone for it a lot, you know, like the 3-for-15, things like that. They clearly want to go for it on fourth down. And you assume that a lot of those must have been 4th and fairly short. You know, they don't want to go for it on 4th and 10 or 15, unless they're way behind, but certainly some interesting stats. The last one on the quick hitters I wanted to say is Nebraska. Nebraska, 126th, according to S&P in special teams play. And just in general, I kind of wanted to say, what's up with this team? I mean, remember all the hype before the season for Nebraska? It was a team that, you know, everybody said, well, hey, Scott Frost, you know, he's had a little bit of time now, Nebraska. Adrian Martinez missed last week's game, but, I mean, Adrian Martinez hasn't been good. So, it looks like Nebraska just doesn't have a good option at quarterback. So I don't know what to make of Nebraska at this point.
No, I think they're just not very good. And really, like really a heartless performance last week too. I mean, Minnesota ran the ball down their throat and they just provided no resistance. In fact, it was a late add to my card on Saturday where I was just looking at the game and I was looking at my power ratings. I was right on the number that was out there. I had it 7 or 7.5. And I was just like, screw it, I'm going to take Minnesota. I mean, they're the better coach team. You know, they're a team that obviously has a good amount of upside. And it was one of the few games I didn't have to sweat over the weekend, that one in South Carolina. And Nebraska's just a mess, man. And again, when you talk about bad special teams, especially when you recruit relatively well, we talked about this point on last week's show, that's a coaching issue, 100%. And maybe Scott Frost isn't going to work there in Lincoln, or at the very least, maybe he needs to fire a special teams coach.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder if Scott Frost is, you know, having second thoughts about being at Lincoln or not. You know, I mean, he had a really good spot there at UCF. You know, I don't know. Maybe this is still his dream job, and Nebraska still could turn it around. I'm not trying to pretend to think that Scott Frost's time at Nebraska couldn't still be very successful. It's just certainly been a very disappointing start.
Well, and as we look around here in college football, and I talked about this on last week's show, a lot of quarterback injuries all over the country. We've got several games here off the board again this week for one reason or another, a lot of them relative to quarterback injuries, but not just the quarterback injuries. You've got cluster injuries. You've got other skill position injuries. Again, it's week 8 here, that war of attrition really starting to wear some of these teams down a little bit. A couple of teams you wanted to mention here specifically today, both from the Lone Star State.
Yeah, North Texas, massive injury problems. Mason Fine, I think most people know how good he is. He's a tremendous quarterback. North Texas needs him in a big way. Went down in last game with an injury. I don't think there's been any update on his status. I do know that they're already without their star receiver Rico Bussey. Trey Siggers, the leading running back for North Texas, also left last game with an injury. They've got all kinds of injury question marks. North Texas, a team that has been disappointing this year to start with, and now they have even more severe injury problems. So definitely cautious about that team. And I also wanted to mention Baylor. Clay Johnson, linebacker, will miss the rest of the season with a knee injury. I think that's a massive hit for Baylor. He's been the star of the Baylor defense, the leader. I hate to see that for Baylor. You know, and Matt Rule's team has played really, really well. And, you know, losing their top defender, I think will hurt this defense quite a bit. And Baylor doesn't have much margin for error because I don't think they really have better talent than the rest of the Big 12. So I'm curious to see that, how that affects them going forward.
Yeah, I agree. And this isn't really the week that you want to be missing a star linebacker. When you take on Oklahoma State and a dual threat guy like Spencer Sanders, I'm actually surprised to see that line coming down a little bit from 4 to 3. I've got it much higher than that. So maybe
Me
a game
too.
where I'm just opposite the market. But as we look at some of the other injuries out there, specifically at the quarterback position, Hank Bachmeier for Boise State, he left last game. Of course, they ran up a ton of points and had a decent lead too. But, you know, we'll see what that one looks like. Jaren Hall from BYU, he actually played pretty well for BYU. He went out. They wound up losing that game to South Florida, lost that game in the fourth quarter, really, after he went out with a concussion. He's, of course, playing in place of Zach Wilson, who's out for the next few weeks. Clayton Tune went out for Houston, but they're a mess all the way around anyway. You mentioned Louisville and their quarterback injuries. Malik Cunningham, still not sure if he's going to play here this week against Clemson. And then also you've got, you know, Ryan Helinski at South Carolina. They say it's a sprained knee. It really didn't look very good. Muschamp says he's going to play this week against Florida. I'd be surprised not only if he plays, but also if he plays well, especially against that Florida defense. So that's one to watch. One other one there, Jamie Newman as well, banged up for Wake Forest. Huge offensive game for Wake Forest last weekend. They had 40 first downs. Of course, they still managed to lose the game, but they had 40 first downs. And then Austin Kendall for West Virginia, he left very early in that game. He hasn't played all that well anyway, but the Mountaineers did nothing on offense when he went out. So just a handful of quarterback injuries there to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I think Kendall, even though he may not be a great player, means quite a bit to them because not very much depth there for West Virginia. And I think that's something important to point out is some of these teams have a lot better quarterback depth than do other teams. A team like West Virginia can't handle that injury very well. A team like North Texas can't afford to have Mason Fine out either.
Yeah, for sure. And of course, we'll see here. We got an injury for this Troy game that we're going to talk about here in a few minutes. Caleb Barker, still not sure if he's going to play in Wednesday's game there against South Alabama. Yeah, you know, again, these are things that you, and it's very hard too, as we talked about last week, there's no standardization of injury reports in college football. So it can be very hard to find information about these guys. You got to use Twitter. You got to use whatever beat writer source you can find because, you know, again, this is that time of the year where these things can really become a big deal. And I do hope for Kendall's sake, he's able to play this week because they're playing Oklahoma, the school he transferred from. Although he may not want to play against Oklahoma the way their defenses look at times this year. All right, so let's take a look at some regression stats here. These are always interesting, and also we tend to see some line moves with these teams. So keep that in mind here as we go forward.
Yeah, Middle Tennessee State is 42nd in the nation in yards per play so far this year, but they're 112th in points per game, 20.7 points per game. I have to tell you, I've had Middle Tennessee State's over the last 2 weeks and have lost both times. So I'll probably get off this over trend about the time they start getting some overs, but you know, that's the way it goes sometimes. But Middle Tennessee State, I would assume that they'll start scoring some more points. It's hard to be 42nd in the nation in yards per play but not score very many points, so that's one that I would look for Middle Tennessee State to start scoring more points, either look to back them or look to play some overs.
And Middle Tennessee plays North Texas this week, so they do take on that banged up mean green offense, so that'll be a game that you want to keep an eye on. 2 weeks ago when they played Marshall, that was a line that came down from, what, 7 to as low as 3.5, I think. So, again, people out there in the market have noticed this. FAU's just been playing a little bit better, so they didn't take money last week. But I would expect, I don't know where this number is going to open. It's obviously going to depend on the injury situations. But I would expect Middle Tennessee State to be a sharper side here, not just next week, but also in the subsequent weeks because of that stat you just mentioned.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think that the market will probably like to back MTSU, and I couldn't disagree with that. I think I mentioned LSU last week, but so I'll make this really quick. But LSU is 34 trips into the red zone, 34 scores, 29 touchdowns out of 34 trips. It's hard to imagine.
How about so LSU, I know the big story about that game is going to be how close Florida kept it. But when you look at the box score for that game, LSU had over 11 yards per play against Florida's defense. Is LSU going to beat Alabama? Because I think there's a real legitimate chance that happens.
Sorry, I was in a little bit of a coughing fit, muting myself over here. So,
all right.
Still probably better that I had it on mute than everybody hearing me coughing. But I think that LSU-Bama is a really interesting game. I can't imagine, you know, predicting that LSU would win that game, but it's a game that I want to watch. I think Bama's team's a little bit unique in that their defense doesn't look as good so far this season. Is their defense actually worse, or is their offense just scoring so quick that, you know, it puts their defense on the field quite a bit? I think that's kind of a interesting question. What do you think about Bama? You think their defense is just not as good as they've been, or do you think that their, you know, explosive offense just kind of skews that stat?
I think it's possible, especially because they had so many injuries there at the second level coming into the season. You know, they lost Mac Wilson to the draft last year. They lose two linebackers for the season before it even starts. I think that's part of it. And I also think, too, that, you know, you're trying to get Tua a Heisman. You're trying to get Tua to be the number one pick because it looks good for your university. But I kind of wonder if there's this Clemson-esque element to Alabama, to where Clemson last week, I mean, that was the first test they've had in conference. And I actually took Florida State in that game, and I regretted it immediately. I wonder if there's kind of a same, you know, semblance of that with Alabama, and in particular Alabama's defense, to where once they know they're going to get tested, they just show up and look like the team of old. That could be it. I don't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to bet against Alabama. You know, I think they have too much talent, even on the defensive side. I think that they're probably still pretty good on defense and that their numbers are probably a little bit skewed there. But maybe Bama's not quite as good on defense as they've been some of the other years, but I still think they're very good. And I think LSU's offense, as good as they've been so far this year, you can't keep scoring every single time you get in the red zone. And 29 touchdowns out of 34 trips. Nobody's going to keep that up. So we'll watch that number going forward. Western Michigan, I mentioned earlier, I wanted to say they have positive regression coming in the red zone. 29 trips into the red zone, 23 scores, and only 16 touchdowns. So, you know, everything that I've said here about Western Michigan makes me think that Western Michigan overs could have some value coming up too, because, like I said, you know, their defense is really bad. They give up a ton of big plays. They get a lot of big plays. They haven't been able to score in the red zone. I think that will probably improve.
Well, and maybe there's a correlation here to the fact that they can't score in the red zone, but they have all these explosive plays of 20 plus yards. You know, when things get tighter there, you know, in the red zone, when you've got less room to work, that probably hurts Western Michigan a little bit. Maybe it's a play design thing, or maybe their wide receivers just don't get separation. The defense kind of, you know, is able to creep in a little bit. The safeties are closer to the line of scrimmage. So maybe that hurts the Western Michigan run game. That sounds like a play design problem to me, because you're obviously moving the football. You're just not moving it when the field gets a little bit smaller. So I don't know, maybe it's, and it's funny too, because Tim Lester, you know, an offensive mind, a quarterback, an offensive coordinator type guy, you would think they'd be a little bit better at that.
Yeah, the thing that makes it kind of strange for me is they've had a lot of big plays in the running game, and you would kind of think that they would be able to run even in the red zone. They haven't been too good at that so far this year. They have 47 plays of 20 plus yards. And they have 28 plays of 30 yards or more. So this Western Michigan offense has some really, really big plays so far this year. Now they've given up a bunch of big plays, like I said, too. 37 plays of 20 yards or more given up. So I think Western Michigan is a team I would look to play some overs with going forward. As I said, they don't play very fast. So you don't want to bet too high of a number, but big plays there on both sides. Florida's defense set for some negative regression. Points per game allowed. They're 51st in the nation in yards per play. Now, I will admit that I think they're a better defense than that. They gave up a lot against LSU last week, and I don't think they're the 51st best defense, but they're 10th in points per game allowed so far this year. It's hard to be 10th in points per game allowed if you're not, you know, an excellent defense. I think Florida's a very good defense. I don't think they're an elite defense.
One other quick note on that Western Michigan thing. Eastern Michigan's 103rd in the country in touchdown percentage against in the red zone. So if regression is coming, maybe a good chance that it comes here this week. So I don't know. Maybe my plus 9.5 ticket won't look as good by the time all is said and done on Saturday. But to your point about Florida here, I agree. I think they certainly are better than 51st in the country in yards per play. And also, too, you get some of these outliers to where the sample sizes, while they're getting to be pretty significant, when you give up over 11 yards per play in a game, going to skew it a little bit too. And,
right.
You know, I thought that Florida would be in a really bad spot against South Carolina this week, but now that spot for South Carolina, not nearly as good coming off that win against Georgia. So I've kind of backed off of my thoughts on that game. Maybe the Florida defense gets right here, and especially if DeCarrion Joyner has to start for South Carolina quarterback.
Yeah, I think that changed that game quite a bit. You know, it's hard to think it's a great spot now for South Carolina, like you kind of assumed it might be. So that's a game that I don't think I'll get involved in. Northern Illinois, a team that we've talked about before, is a team that's due for some positive regression on offense. They're 93rd in yards per play allowed so far this year, but they're 20th best in third down defense at 31.58% third down conversions for their opponents. I think some negative regression here on defense, positive regression on offense. I would likely look to play some Northern Illinois overs as well. I know they play a team this week that's not very good on offense, so it'll be a fairly low total. You know, if it's low enough, maybe take an over in that one. But as a general thought here going forward, Northern Illinois overs will likely have some value.
I agree. I think that's a good one to look at here, too. And also, I mean, you know, look, you've got a first-year head coach here in Thomas Hammack. You've got, I'm sure, injuries are starting to set in for them, too, as they are for a lot of different teams out there. And, you know, I mean, this guy was a running backs coach in the NFL, so you've kind of got to wonder about that defense. As maybe they start to play some better caliber competition in the MAC, they don't do it here this week against Miami of Ohio, but as we go down the line here, they will play some better offenses.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they're going to play some better offenses, and they're playing a lot worse defenses. The MAC, as we said, totally wide open, and honestly, it's just not very good either. So you would think that they would be able to score some more points. Last one I have here, Texas, minus 0.39 yards per play, which is 96th in the country. Look, Texas did this last year. You know, unless they have some sort of magic formula for winning games despite losing yards per play margin, I'd have to expect some regression here. And I will say I hope that some regression comes here because I have Texas season win total under 9, 9.5, some on both numbers. So, you know, I hope that Texas will have some regression, and I think that if this continues, they probably will. Certainly last week's game was misleading as far as the final. I think Oklahoma dominated that game a lot more than the final score would indicate.
Yeah, when you look at that game last week, you know, Oklahoma left so many points on the field in the first half. They outgained Texas by 200 yards, 511 to 310. So that game was definitely not as close as the box score or as the final score would suggest. And you've still got the narrative, well, Tom Herman as an underdog. Yeah, well, Oklahoma let them stay in that game. They didn't capitalize on their chances in the first half, and that's why Texas was able to cover the number. Otherwise, that game probably looks a lot different. And by the way, when you look at Texas here going forward, right, you've got a first-year coach in Chris Klieman. This is just the month of November schedule for Texas. First-year head coach in Chris Klieman, who should be doing better with that program as the year goes along on November 9th. At Iowa State on November 16th, at Baylor on November 23rd, Texas Tech on a short week on November 29th. Texas has got four really tough games in the month of November. They've got a get-right game here this week against Kansas, but their November schedule is against some Big 12 teams that are getting better as the year goes along. Two first-year head coaches, two head coaches that have really put positive stamps on their respective programs. Texas may very well end up losing four games during the regular season, and it wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, I hope you're right. I mean, like I said, I do think that Texas is set up to have potential bet against spots here going forward, you know, even ATS-wise. I think that, you know, this Texas team, I'm not saying they're a bad team. I'm just saying that I think that they may be overvalued in the betting marketplace. I think that Tom Herman's a good coach. He's done great as an underdog, and I mean, you know, at this point, it's almost getting a little bit old to hear the Tom Herman as an underdog ATS number, like you said. I mean, it's if you were playing some drinking game and somebody were talking about Tom Herman as an underdog, you'd definitely be in trouble. But, you know, Texas is a team where I think they're a good team. I don't think they're a great team. And I think some people think they're a great team. So I'll look for spots to go against them moving forward.
All right, we got one other system or angle to take a look at here. We like to throw some of these out on the show, and then we'll get into some of these game breakdowns. But I think this one's really, really interesting, and I do like this one a lot.
Yeah, I always try to look for these kind of interesting ones. Sometimes I'll spend some time in Bet Labs in the queries and just kind of put in quite a few different stats and see if I find anything. This is one I've never talked about before on here. A team with a three-game turnover margin of negative two turnovers or more on average per game and has won one or less of those last three games, you're backing that team after this stretch. And if you back this team after this stretch, you're 255 and 212, which is 54, 54.6% ATS since 2005. If this team also has an ATS cover percentage of less than 50%, so not 50%, it has to be lower than that, 194 and 147 ATS, which is 56.9%. I think it's certainly an interesting angle with backing teams who have had some big negative turnover margins lately. I kind of like this angle. You know, if you think about it, turnover margin is something that usually regresses to the mean. So this is something where there could be overreactions from a recency bias standpoint. So I think that this is one that we should continue to watch going forward.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, I'll bring it back to that Baylor and Oklahoma State game where, you know, Oklahoma State a couple of weeks ago, they are off a bye. They lost to Texas Tech and they were minus five in turnover margin in that game. And this is why you really want to look at the box scores. I sort of feel like, because we haven't seen Oklahoma State in a couple weeks, because what everyone remembers is that loss to Texas Tech, I think that's why this line against Baylor is coming down a little bit. It's now painted three pretty much market wide out there as we're doing the show today. Turnover margin matters. And again, you've got some of these games where maybe it's fumble luck, or maybe it's a team that, you know, trailed badly in the second half. The quarterback's just chucking to try and get back into the game. Maybe that's not the offense that they typically run. Maybe they're more balanced. Maybe they run the football usually. They don't pass the ball, and they're forced to pass the ball because they're trailing, and things happen. So I agree with looking for regression to the mean from a turnover margin standpoint. That's a really good angle to consider.
Yeah, and we've got one game we're going to talk about here coming up that the team meets the system. Now, I will say that I don't know if I love this one, so I'm kind of curious to see your thoughts when we talk about this game, but it'll be something that I can bring up going forward as we talk about it, some teams that will fit this system of turnover regression to the mean.
Yeah, definitely looking forward to whichever game that is here. And just so our listeners are aware, a few of the top teams here in turnover margin, San Jose State, number one, they are plus 12 in turnover margin. They're actually plus 11 in interceptions alone. So we'll see. I mean, obviously, Josh Love has played very, very well this year for them, but one to keep an eye on. Notre Dame is plus 10, along with San Diego State. The worst teams in the country here, not a big surprise. New Mexico State is minus 15. Hawaii, minus 12. New Mexico, minus 10, which is really interesting because that's a team that typically doesn't throw the football a whole lot, but they have 11 interceptions here on the season. So they should probably throw it even less than they've been throwing it here this year. All right, so we go to Wednesday, and we go to game 301-302 here in the Fun Belt. Decidedly less Fun Belt than last week's App State and Louisiana game is South Alabama and Troy. Troy, a two-touchdown and a hook favorite. Some places also the 15 here. Any thoughts on this game that you want to really dive into?
Yeah, very, very little to say in this game. Caleb Barker is pretty important to that Troy offense. Have a veteran there throwing it around. South Bama's been a little bit better than I thought they would be so far this year. I would say that the biggest thing that they've improved on is defense. You know, South Bama still doesn't have an offense that can do too much. To me, South Bama is a team that 65% of their offensive plays have been running plays. They can't throw it much at all. I think they want this to be a lower scoring game because I don't think they think they can keep up with Troy in a higher scoring game. Troy has much better team in the trenches than does South Bama. They're also much better in special teams. So, you know, I would lean toward taking Troy, but I don't want to bet it without knowing about Caleb Barker. And obviously, you know, 15 points, 14 and a half, 15 points, nothing great. And that where you said, what you said to start with was the first thing I was going to say is just, you know, not nearly as interesting as a game as we had last Wednesday with App State and Louisiana.
No, and I mean, these two schools, while both in the state of Alabama, they're about 3 hours apart. So this isn't necessarily a rivalry game, but you can look at this to a degree, even though these teams are in the same conference, as sort of a little brother versus big brother type of game. I mean, Troy has been, you know, kind of at the forefront of this conference for quite some time. South Alabama, you know, a relative newcomer. Troy is used to having big games against App State or, you know, now Louisiana or Arkansas State, something like that. Whereas South Alabama kind of wants to try and work itself up to that level. I don't know if it ever happens, but there is a little brother, big brother element to this game that I'd be kind of worried about to a degree from the Troy side. Now, Troy is just clearly the better team, but for South Alabama here, again, a chance to go knock off a big brother that may be looking at some of its more important games down the road. you know, maybe that's something that does kind of work in South Alabama's favor a little bit here. Troy doesn't play any of those big games until later on in the season. Louisiana and App State are their last two games, but still just maybe something to consider a little bit.
No, I think that is a good point. I think it's a really good point. Troy, you know, they likely are less excited about this game than is South Alabama. And if you like South Bama, you probably like the under. If you like Troy, that probably correlates to the over. So that's something to keep in mind, too. I know Circa's opening number was 56 on this one. I think that's about right, to be honest. So I don't really have any lean on that number on a total. And like I said, you know, certainly what Barker's status is matters quite a bit here. But I don't think I really want to lay the points with Troy regardless. I think you make a really good point that this game means a lot to South Bama. Troy has, you would say, maybe bigger fish to fry. And we'll see if they overlook this game or if they're just kind of happy to get a close win. So not a game that I'm interested in betting, to be honest.
Yeah, I think this is one. I mean, my number is 14, so maybe this is a pizza money type of game. And I'm not talking about going out to a nice Italian restaurant for pizza. I'm talking about getting, like, you know, oven fresh, hot and ready pizza or something like that. Kind of pizza money on that one. But this one in the Sun Belt looks better on Thursday night. Louisiana and Arkansas State. And I wound up taking Appalachian State last week. I took the +3 and a little bit of extra juice. Kind of pissed off at myself for not taking the money line, too. It felt like one of those spots where we weren't ready for a changing of the guard yet in the Sun Belt Conference, and App State really shut it down defensively. Arkansas State has not shut anybody down in terms of their defense. They gave up over 700 yards to Georgia State a couple of weeks ago. So what about this one here with Louisiana, a 5.5-point road favorite?
Yeah, both of us had a winner there in that last Wednesday game. I had under 70 in that game, and you know, App State's defense was just so good in that game. I was really surprised that Louisiana couldn't run more than they did against App State. I think App State's defense is quite a bit better than they looked in the non-conference, thanks to, you know, they gave up quite a few yards in situations where they were ahead by a lot. So I think that number was skewed a little bit on App State's defense, but still a very impressive performance by them. Louisiana and Arkansas State here, I don't think you're going to see any kind of that defense like we saw in that game. Circa had this total at 69. We've got a total that, to me, I think this is a game where I would probably take over if it's at that. I will say that Arkansas State, if you look at that game, it wasn't just one game for Arkansas State. They've given up more than 600 yards per game their last two games. They also gave up 526 yards to SIU. So this is an Arkansas State defense that has some significant weaknesses. Louisiana secondary improved this year. Defensive front, Louisiana not too great. Arkansas State not a good running game. So I think this matchup kind of sets up well for Louisiana. Arkansas State's run defense is a weakness. Louisiana can run very well. Look, this is a Louisiana team that can run on almost everybody. They're second in the nation yards per carry so far this year, 6.85 yards per carry. So this Louisiana rushing offense, I think, will bust some really big plays in this one. My leans here would be over and Louisiana.
Yeah, and also Arkansas State gave up 9.9 yards per play to Georgia in a game that the Bulldogs didn't really care too much about. They were just able to do whatever they wanted to do. I will say this. My initial thought on this game was to take Arkansas State. And my line is 4.5, so I'm kind of in the area anyway. It's not like I have a key number or anything like that. My initial thought was Arkansas State just because I feel like this is a tough spot for Louisiana. I know that this game obviously means a lot here, given that it's on the same side within the division. So this is a game that, you know, could very well be a Sun Belt Conference, you know, eliminator game for the West Division, especially because both of these teams now have a loss in conference play. So I think that Arkansas State may be a little bit more accustomed to this type of spot. I think offensively, they're still very, very good. The problem is that Arkansas State defense is just so bad that I can't overlook it, because they're also going to have to be really efficient on offense and maximize their possessions. To some degree, playing Louisiana is like playing an option team, because their offense is so good in a running department that it sort of limits the possessions that you're going to get unless you give up big plays and give up long touchdown runs. So as much as I want to take Arkansas State, and as much as I feel like Arkansas State may be the sharper, quote-unquote, side from philosophically in this game, I don't think I can do it.
Yeah, I think that's a good point in that it's a better spot for Arkansas State. You know, they had a week off here. Louisiana was playing App State, a huge game for them. I will say Louisiana's played really well on the road this year. Really impressive performance at Ohio and Georgia Southern. So they've proven that they can win on the road. I think the matchup looks good for Louisiana. Like you said, the spot's not great for Louisiana. I think my favorite play here would be the over. Hopefully we get a number in the 60s instead of the 70s.
Well, this is one of those games, and this is the last point I'll make here about this game, is that if Louisiana does well, goes out there, covers the number, looks good in the process, runs up, you know, 500 yards on Arkansas State like everybody else has, in a difficult spot, you've got to give Louisiana respect for that win. And that's something I don't think people realize here, especially if they do their own power ratings. They're going to say, well, they were a 5.5-point favorite. They were supposed to win. Yes, but not all wins are created equal. If you go on the road to Jonesboro against a well-established Arkansas State program and you win this game comfortably a week after getting brought down a peg against App State, that's a huge win for this program this year and going forward, assuming Billy Napier is still there. So you've got to adjust this team in your mind and in your power ratings as a result.
I agree with that. I think both of these teams have very good coaching staff. So you wonder if Napier is going to be there for too long. Obviously, Anderson has been through so much this year. I think he's a really good head coach. Don't give a coaching edge to anybody in this one. But, you know, this Ark State team has had quite a few injuries so far this year. Now, they've been able to still move the ball on offense despite the injuries at quarterback. But, you know, I would say I still lean Louisiana in this one. I don't know that I'll have any money on it. I will be looking to see what the total's set at.
Yeah, I'll definitely be looking to see what the total looks like as well. It should be an interesting one for sure. So we don't have a line here for the Pac-12 after dark game, at least after dark for us East Coasters. In game 307-308, UCLA and Stanford. My line on this game would be Stanford minus 6.5. But again, we've got a Stanford team here that week in and week out, I don't know what I'm going to get.
Yeah, my line was 7 here, and I in my notes, I put a bunch of question marks by this one. You know, I don't know what to do with this game. This is a game that I'll pass unless there's some kind of egregious mistake by the odds makers to where I just think it's way off. I don't want to have money on this game. You know, this is a UCLA team that I don't know what we're going to get out of, a Stanford team that I don't know what we're going to get out of. I think they've both been very inconsistent so far this year. I guess if I had to lean some way, it would be the over, but there's so many injuries on offense that I hate to take that too, especially with the tempo that Stanford plays at. So to me, this is an almost unbettable game.
Yeah, I think so too. And you know, look, I mean, UCLA is not going to make a bowl game. They're 1-5. I mean, that's not the talk in the locker room. They're not sitting there saying, well, we're not going to make a bowl, but they're not. You know, they play Arizona State, Colorado, at Utah, at USC, and Cal. They're not going to find wins. If they want to get another win, they may have to win this game. I think they could probably beat Colorado at home, but this is maybe their best remaining shot at a win. So you kind of wonder about that. You kind of wonder about the character of that team. I think there have been some questions about the character of that team. Now Theo Howard's going to redshirt and transfer. You know, you wonder about Chip Kelly and how he's getting through to this team. At least I know, or at least I have a pretty good idea that Stanford's going to show up here. Yeah. So maybe I lean Stanford based on that. But again, I don't think we're going to see much line value here anyway.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said right there. You know, if I was forced to pick something, I'd probably take Stanford here. Just based on the fact that I feel like, you know, what kind of motivation they're going to have versus UCLA. So I agree with your point, definitely.
All right, so we go to Friday. We got a four-pack of Friday games here, beginning in Conference USA, 309-310. Marshall and Florida Atlantic. Florida Atlantic, a 5.5-point favorite in this one. What are you thinking, Kyle?
Well, here's the one that fits the turnover system. You've got Marshall that matches that system with a lot of turnovers here of late. You wonder if they're going to have some positive regression coming with turnovers. I have to say, I don't know if I love Marshall in this game, though. They're 1-5 ATS so far this year, and they have the turnover system going for them. Still, this is a hard one for me. I think FAU is the team that I trust more here. I think they're definitely improving week by week. And I'm kind of wondering about Marshall's coaching staff. They've lost some coordinators here in the past couple years. I wonder if, you know, those coordinators being gone is hurting them more than what I thought it would. To me, this is a hard game to bet on the side. I would probably lean to the over here. The circa number is 59, which I was hoping it'd be lower than that. So if it's 59, I would probably pass. But, you know, you would think Marshall would start scoring more points. They've constantly gotten down in the red zone and thrown interceptions or somehow missed a field goal or found ways to not score. You would think that they'll start scoring some more points. I think this FAU offense is definitely looking much better in recent weeks. But, you know, I'm curious to see what your thoughts are on the side here based on Marshall being 1-5 ATS and they do fit that turnover system.
Yeah, I think this is a tough one. I mean, I think Florida Atlantic has kind of become a buy team out there in the market. You know, Chris Robeson has this offense going in the right direction. We figured it would take a little bit of time with some of the losses, most notably Devin Singletary from last year. But Florida Atlantic feels like a play-on team. My number is 6.5 here in this game. But Marshall, you know, you mentioned they've had some turnover misfortune here of late. And Florida Atlantic's still giving up 6 yards per play and still 5.85 yards per play in their two conference games here so far. They've gotten torched through the air a little bit in those games, over 600 yards. So I don't know. I think this is a tough spot to really like either one of these teams. Lines in that dead zone between 4 and 6. I want to see which way the market pushes this number and maybe give me a little bit of clarity here on, you know, which side sharper bettors do like.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see what the line movement looks like in this game. So far, you've got the bets are almost exactly split and the money's pretty even, too. So we haven't seen any kind of sharp involvement in this game yet. Obviously, it's Monday morning. So, you know, this is not something where you're going to have too many games where you see it by this point. But I would kind of think that if the line is to move here, I would think it would probably move toward Florida Atlantic. What about you?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, at least initially, because again, you've got a team that's, you know, just looks more trustworthy and also has a sexier offensive profile. So I think we do see 6, maybe 6.5, but this one's not going to touch 7, but I do think it's more likely to go up than go down.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with those thoughts. I think 6 is probably 6, 6.5. I don't think it'll go higher than that, but it would surprise me if Florida Atlantic goes down to 4.5 or 4 or anything like that.
Yeah, that would. If it does, it would be significant sharp money on the Marshall side, because you've got to think, when all is said and done, the public's probably going to take the lane train here. And with this being an early kickoff on Friday, you know, we're going to need to see some sharp Marshall money to keep this thing from getting to 6.5 or so. So, again, very important to follow the market and take a look at what's going on out there and read between the lines. Read into the context of the line as well, so you can get some good thoughts that way. Game 3-11, 3-12, Pitt and Syracuse. This one's 3, 3.5, varying juice, pretty much market-wide with Pitt. A road favorite going up to the Dome there in upstate New York. What do you think about this one?
So this is my favorite of the games that we're going to talk about. I know I haven't had too much opinion on some of the other games. I like Pitt in this one, if I were going to take some. I was actually kind of just upset when I just saw the line going from 3 to 3.5 as we were talking about one of the other games. We got the odds board open, considering playing Pitt myself here. So I'll probably watch this line a little bit more and see what happens. But I do like Pitt in this one. Not a big PR overlay for me. This is more just a matchup spot. Syracuse has allowed 26 sacks so far this year. Pitt has 27 sacks, the second best in the country in sacks. So I think that's a big problem for Syracuse here. And the times that I've watched Syracuse a couple times this year, I think that DeVito holds the ball for too long. You know, this line in front of him is not very good. And he's got to get rid of the ball a lot quicker, especially knowing that. And I think, you know, it's kind of surprising in a Dino Babers offense that you're not getting rid of the ball faster than he does. I don't think that he has grasped this offense very well. You've got a Pitt defense that is 10th in the nation in yards per play allowed. Definitely positive regression candidate, the Pitt defense, based on how many points they've given up. These two offenses are both not good. You know, they play fairly fast, but Syracuse 107th in yards per play on offense and Pitt 108th. You know, which defense do you trust more? I certainly trust the Pitt defense more. I lean Pitt on the side. I also like the under in this game. I think that this could be a fairly low scoring game here. We've got two teams that have not been very efficient on offense. The Syracuse defense is clearly better than they were a few years ago. And this Syracuse offense is way down. Pitt has not been very good on offense the last few years in general. And Pickett hasn't been able to, you know, consistently show that he's a very good college football quarterback. So I would lean the under here, especially if we can get a 55 or 56, something like that in this game. I also like Pitt in this game.
Yeah, I like Pitt here too. I mean, my number is 2.5. So I'm even on the other side of that key number of 3. But like you said, not a big overlay. But again, from a matchup standpoint, you know, being able to get after the quarterback just means so much. And for Syracuse here, I mean, maybe it's not a DeVito problem. Maybe it's a wide receiver problem. They've lost their top wide receiver each of the last 3 years, twice to the NFL. So maybe guys just aren't getting separation. But at the same time, you can't take that abuse. And Dungy took a ton of abuse. DeVito's taken some abuse this year, too, even though Syracuse hasn't played that great of a schedule. So I agree with you. I think that Pitt is the side here. Both of these teams similar in yards per play, both 5.04, but big defensive difference here. And it's on the Pitt side. And again, if Syracuse is going to be facing a bunch of third and longs, whereas Pitt's going to be facing third and manageable, even though Pickett and Whipple maybe don't seem to be gelling as well as you would have hoped, it's still going to make things a lot easier for Pitt. So I do like Pitt here minus a 3.5.
Yeah, I hope this line goes back down. I'm kind of afraid it won't, to be honest. But you know, this is a Pitt team to me that, you know, I'd rather buy Pitt than sell them. And Syracuse has kind of proven that they weren't as good as I thought they might be so far this season. So this is a Pitt team I'm looking to back. So I like Pitt in this game. I also like the under.
All right, so we go to the Friday night game here in the Big Ten. A little bit of a unique spot for both of these teams. We don't see a whole lot of weeknight Big Ten games, and especially not a whole lot of weeknight Big Ten games featuring the Ohio State Buckeyes. Game 313, 314, Ohio State 27.5-point favorite. Ohio State, of course, off the bye, as we know. Not Urban Meyer anymore, though. It is Ryan Day. So what do you think about the Buckeyes laying about 4 touchdowns here in Evanston?
I've got a question for you here. I'm going to throw this back and put you on the spot. Hopefully you haven't seen this already, but what percentage of the tickets do you think are on Ohio State so far?
I'd say somewhere around 85 or so.
Good guess. Really good. 82% of the bets and 93% of the money on Ohio State here. Kind of my point with that is it's hard for me to imagine Northwestern getting too much support here. You had 27, now 27.5. I think if you like Northwestern, you wait. This line is likely to continue going up. You know, as I handicap this game, I've said before, I don't love having bets in Ohio State games just because I'm such a big Buckeyes fan that, you know, I don't want to be conflicted in any way. But I will say, you know, if I had to bet this game, I would bet Ohio State. Northwestern, 130th in yards per play in the country. That's dead last. I mean, you know, this Pat Fitzgerald team has really disappointed me a lot. I thought, you know, with Johnson, maybe they'd be better with some better quarterback play. They've had a bad offensive line. I know they've had some decent quarterbacks there in the past, and they still haven't been able to move the ball that well. But Johnson was so highly recruited that you kind of hoped that he would be able to fit well in this system. That has not worked at all. You know, this is just a big talent mismatch. I like backing Pat Fitzgerald's team as an underdog, but I've watched Ohio State every minute of every game just about so far this year, and Ohio State looks really good. I mean, as a fan, obviously excited about that. You never know what'll happen. They could trip up a couple times and it wouldn't be shocking, but this Ohio State team looks very good. And I wonder how Northwestern's going to score here. I mean, how are they going to score much at all? Circa's total was 49.5. You know, usually you say, oh gosh, I can get 28 points with a total of 49 or something like that. You would probably want to take the underdog, but I mean, is Northwestern going to score more than 10 points in this game? I don't know. It's hard to imagine.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, look, I will say this, my line's only 23 on this game. So I guess I haven't lowered Northwestern enough. Maybe I don't have Ohio State high enough. There's also an inflation price to pay here with Ohio State because they've looked so good. So that's part of it too. Maybe this line from a raw power rating standpoint is 24.5 for the odds makers out there, but they know they're getting runaway Ohio State money here unless something sharp comes back in on Northwestern. And like you said, how can you back Northwestern with just how awful their offense has been? I will say this. The saving grace for Northwestern backers at plus 28.5, because this line's going to get there, would be that Ohio State plays Wisconsin next week. So if Justin Fields plays in the second half, and I know you and I were talking about this with the Nebraska game, why is Fields still out there? What are they doing with him still out there? This is one where I get Fields off the field immediately. You know, you go out there, you hang your 28-0, 28-3, 35-3 first half, and you get him the hell out of the game because you've got to beat Wisconsin next week at home. So that's what I would look at here. Maybe Ohio State first half as opposed to laying the full game price. But again, like you said, Northwestern maybe chugging off plays the second half for Gunnar Hoke or somebody like that, and Northwestern still doesn't score. So that's the problem here is you're asking Northwestern to get probably into double digits and certainly to 14 or 17, I would think, to cover this number. And, man, that doesn't look like it's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. You went there where I was thinking that I was going to go as well here. If I was going to bet this game, I'd probably take Ohio State first half. I guess I don't bet first halves enough to know in college football exactly where this first half line would be. How much do you think Ohio State would be favored by in the first half here?
21, maybe? 21.5, something like that?
Yeah, I was going to say 20 or 20, but maybe 20 is too low and everybody would want to take Ohio State. I don't know. You know, it's hard to lay 20 or 21, 21.5 points in the first half. So to be honest, if it's 21 or 21.5, I probably would stay away from this game. But, you know, this is a game where I think Ohio State kind of coasts to a victory. Like you said, I think that this would be very wise to take Justin Fields out to play it pretty vanilla. Wisconsin looks excellent. You know, I think that's going to be a really, really good game, Ohio State and Wisconsin. So that's a game as a fan really looking forward to. I'll be curious to see what kind of line comes out on that game. But, you know, you could argue that this is a bad spot for Ohio State, and that's what you'd have to argue if you're taking Northwestern in this game. And like you said, and like I suggested earlier, if you want Northwestern here, just wait for 28.5 because it'll come.
So I will say this, and I reserve the right to be wrong on this show because it's my damn show, but Florida State and Clemson last week, line was 26.5. Clemson's first half line was only minus 14.5. So I guess it seems like we're way overshooting this, being up around 20 or 21. Maybe because, you know, Florida State is at least a team with an offensive pulse. Maybe this is more like, you know, Ohio State minus 16, minus 16.5, something like that. So, you know, my apologies. I think we maybe led our listeners astray a little bit by overshooting this number. But that being said, if you and I think that this is something where Ohio State's competitive at 20, 20.5, 21, if it's 14.5 or something, I like Ohio State first half a lot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if it's 14.5, I'll bet Ohio State in the first half in this game. I will say that as far as that other game, you wonder if that's an apples-to-apples comparison because, remember, Florida State's been really good in the first half in several of these games and just absolutely sucked in the second half. So, offensively, they've been able to do a lot in the first half in previous games. Now, they didn't against Clemson, obviously, but previously they had been good in the first half and bad in the second half. So, I'll be curious to see what this line comes out at based on what you said there, you know, 17, 16.5 maybe. If it's under 17, I would want Ohio State here.
Toledo was minus 16.5 or minus 17 against Bowling Green. And that was, okay, you know, a road team line in a similar area, but not, of course, Ohio State. So maybe it's 17.5. You know, I don't know. I guess that's probably, you know, where we can expect it to be here. One more game to talk about here for this week. And fortunately, it's UNLV and Fresno State. So probably not a whole lot for either one of us to say about this one. But I will say this, Fresno State 14-point favorite here. My God, how shitty is Vanderbilt? Like, how do you let that happen at home? Not just losing, but getting thoroughly beaten by UNLV.
That one really surprised me the most of any game this past Saturday. You know, UNLV really hadn't shown any signs of really a
of
pulse.
Anything.
Yeah. I mean, I knew Vanderbilt was bad, and you knew Vanderbilt was really bad, but, you know, that really surprised me a lot. I think that UNLV has been a bit better passing here of late. I don't know. Is Rogers just not the starter anymore, or is Rogers still hurt? I'm not really sure, you know, if they've just decided to go to the backup quarterback or if Rogers is still injured and he might come back here for UNLV. I see he's listed as questionable. You kind of have to wonder if you just keep going with the backup based on what has happened here so far. And Rogers is a good runner, but his passing has been so bad for UNLV that, you know, it becomes, you're just totally one dimensional. So UNLV has at least been able to throw it a little bit here of late. If you look at this game, I don't know what to do with this game. Fresno State clearly down a few notches from the last couple seasons. Their defense is no longer dominant like they've been in the past. They don't have a veteran leader at quarterback. Still, this is a bad spot for UNLV after winning at Nashville. I would say that, you know, they could be feeling pretty good about themselves, and it actually might have been more about Vanderbilt than about them. So 13.5 was the opening number. We see now 14 or 14.5. And I think it's interesting to point out that early in the week, you got 58% of the bets on UNLV, but 68% of the money here on Fresno State.
Yeah, Kenyon Oblad, the backup quarterback for UNLV, 52.6% completion rate, 5-3 touchdown interception ratio. So, I mean, they're at least moving the football through the air. He hasn't been overly efficient for them. I will say this, man. I liked Fresno State last week. I was very tempted. I think I did end up taking them +3, actually. I was very tempted to take the money line against Air Force. You're off a bye to prep for the option. Air Force off that devastating loss in the Commander-in-Chief's trophy game to Navy. And Air Force just completely throttled them. 340 yards on the ground. Fresno State, we figured their offense would regress with all the big losses they had from last year, but this is just not the same Fresno State team. And I really thought Jeff Tedford, with that extra prep time, would have his team in better shape last week. Now, different type of animal, of course, playing the option as opposed to playing UNLV. Now you're at home instead of on the road, so on and so forth. But, man, I don't trust Fresno at all. This is a game I'm just not going to touch.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a fair point. They had extra time to get ready for that game. Air Force does have a good home field advantage, and obviously it's a very unique style. So, you know, that probably doesn't apply much to this game since Air Force and UNLV are so much different. But, you know, it does tell you that Fresno State's quite a bit down. Like you, I'm very unlikely to bet this game.
All right, before I let you go here, man, any games you're looking at on Saturday, whether it's just from an initial intrigue perspective or just games you're looking forward to watching?
Yeah, Oregon and Washington, a game that I'm really, really interested in because, you know, Oregon looked really good last week. I think that was more about Colorado than it was about Oregon. But, you know, Washington's offense looked very good last week against Arizona. I'm curious to see what kind of total we get here. So far, we've seen the line movement go toward Oregon. You know, I like Oregon better as a team, but I still can't disrespect Chris Peterson and the Huskies too much. If we see this line keep going up, you know, 3.5 or 4, I don't know if it'll get that high, but I would be tempted to lean toward Washington in this game. You know, Oregon still has to prove it to me. You know, Oregon's a good team. Are they a really good team? I'm not sure yet. I think that's a really fascinating game.
I'll throw one out for our listeners here as well. And of course, we'll talk about both of these games with our other guests as we go throughout the week. Michigan and Penn State. This line at the Golden Nugget opener was Michigan -4.5 over the summer. Penn State is now a 9-point favorite. This line got bumped up from 7.5 to 9. Circa opened at 8. Man, we talked in the lead up to that Michigan-Wisconsin game about the big adjustment from the summer. And have we really seen enough to justify it? And then Wisconsin just waxed Michigan in that game. Wisconsin was the right side the whole way. Anybody that took Michigan knew their bet was gone immediately. Man, I wonder if this game plays out the same way.
Yeah, I mean, you and I both had Iowa this past weekend, and that was not an easy loss to take. I think that Penn State still, you know, I'm not sure Penn State's a great team. Penn State's offense is only so-so. Wisconsin's a better team than Penn State, in my opinion. So, you know, what do you get in this game? I mean, on the surface, you know, my line here is 7.5. So, and you know, maybe I'm too low on Penn State still. I wouldn't want to lay the points with Penn State, but how can you back Jim Harbaugh in a game like this? I mean, I think this is a hard game to bet.
I think so too. My line's 7. So, you know, again, I mean, I don't think I'm going to do the mental gymnastics to give myself a Michigan ticket, but oh boy, especially, you know, 9. I mean, the total's not going to be that high for this game either. You know, I mean, that's a big number with what's going to be a pretty reasonable total. So,
right.
Oof, man. Well, I guess we'll see how that one plays out. And of course, we'll talk about that one throughout the week here with our other guests that join us. Kyle Hunter, professional handicapper over at huntersportspicks.com. What's going on over there right now, man, with just about 3 weeks left till college basketball starts?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You know, this is a busy time of the year for me because it's prep time for both NBA and college basketball, but still keep the, you know, finishing off baseball, keep the football going. And, you know, with so many clients being most interested in football this time of the year, I still have to keep my focus on football the most. But I've lowered the prices on the subscriptions for football for the rest of the season. You can also sign up for the free picks newsletter over there at Hunter Sports Picks if you haven't already. 82 and 53 run here on the free picks. So try to send that newsletter out a couple times there Friday night and on Saturday night with a free pick and also some, look at betting data, the sharp money, see where things are going. So it's an informative newsletter. If you haven't signed up for it already, I would encourage you to do so.
Well, make sure, of course, that you follow Kyle on Twitter as well, at Kyle Hunter Picks. Kyle Hunter, huntersportspicks.com. Appreciate your time as always, brother. It's always fun, man. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks. Take care, man.
There you go. There's Kyle Hunter again, professional handicapper over at huntersportspicks.com. Coming up on our Tuesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll chat NFL, NHL, and some golf with Brian Blessing of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline, and then talk a little bit of college hoops, college football, and the NFL with professional handicapper Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.